Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Chad Sacramento's own Riley.
I am not alongside you. I am in front of you.
And actually, you're not Sacramento own, you're Indianapolis.
I know, I'm not even from Sacramento.
We're renting you, though.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm on loan for an indefinite period of time.
And also with us this lovely show is Spencer Williams.
A lovely man for a lovely show.
A lovely man for a lovely show.
I am here, and I am very lovely today.
That's right, you're going to own that.
Gonna own it.
We got a great show in store for you as we're going to be reviewing a very unique film that is unique to this area. And we're actually a little excited to get into it. We haven't talked about it much, but I can't wait to see and hear what these guys got to say. So
that's what you think.
Yeah, well, we'll see. But before we do, Chad's going to hit us with a little bit of news about the Filmlosophers.
Hitcha, proudly hailing from Sacramento, California. The Filmlosophers podcast is presented by Mingle Media TV and recorded live at VGB Studios. If you're ready to challenge convention and think outside the box, you should totally subscribe to our podcast. We're on all of your favorite platforms, including Audioboom, Libsyn, iTunes, Google Play, Player FM, and Stitcher, and probably a few others that we don't bother to list.
Yeah, we episodes. Haven't checked it out yet.
Yeah, I know. We're a global phenomenon.
We are.
So
we can't help it.
At over 100 episodes in, we should be by now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we may be like assuming this, but it's got to be true. Anyway, new episodes debut each Wednesday. Spencer, where else can they find us?
Not thrilled with the name your parents gave you? Ready to go buy something else? Well, whatever you want, join the conversation on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers. Please note, Facebook has a real name policy, so you can't go by whatever you want there. You can also join us on Twitter, where you can use whatever name you want.
That was like a public service announcement. I love that.
I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, okay. That's the thing.
Disclaimer.
They introduced that in 2020.
Images in mirror are closer than they appear.
All right. You can also find us at Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101 and let us know what you think of our latest reviews and other movie news. No matter where you go in life, as long as there's internet, you'll have access to all of our current and previous episodes on our website. Type filmlosophers.com into your browser and start catching up on all the episodes you may have missed.
That's right. We got a website. I'm sorry. I was looking at it.
I love how that's new information every week. We have a website.
We have a website.
Yes.
It still catches me off guard. And you know what? I am so glad that we are finally using it. Yeah. So
this is going to be a fantastic episode.
This is gonna be a great episode.
It already is. Let's just call it quits. Cut our losses and go home. Oh, wait.
We're only 3 minutes into the episode. We're already ready to call it. Like we said, we have a great show in store for you guys today as we are going to be reviewing a very special film to this particular city of Sacramento, which is where we hail from, as we mentioned earlier, and that is Lady Bird.
See, now you've done it. Now I do have Fergie in my head. You were mentioning, before we started this, you saw
Chad
that was
proudly
the script.
Hailing.
Proudly hailing.
Like,
and
I'm
I was
like, is that a jab at Fergie?
It hailed in Sacramento today. I mean, it was a very haily day. But
you
brought up Fergie's NBA All-Star fiasco. And yeah, now I'm like,
fiasco or flawless victory for Fergie?
In what?
That's
herself?
An interesting proposition, Spencer. We don't have time for that.
I was going to say, I don't think we have enough time.
We don't have time for that debate.
We don't have time to help you understand how that was not a flawless victory. What we do have time for, however, is to discuss the movie in question that I said we've been hinting at all this time. And obviously the film is Lady Bird. Lady Bird is a film that has been getting a lot of attention as of late, not only for its indie appeal and so forth, but it's been getting a lot of attention from a lot of the major award ceremonies out there, such as the BAFTAs, the Critics' Choice, and now the big one coming up, the Academy Awards. And so we decided that we wanted to talk about it, seeing as The film itself was filmed here in Sacramento, and we are here in Sacramento. And
we are late to the party.
We are very late to the party.
Fashionably so.
Hey, we're not late till the awards come out, and we're in front of them.
I'm going to go with his way of thinking. I agree with you, Spencer.
I think that cleans your Fergie comment, so I think we're good to go. Chad, why don't you hit us with that synopsis?
All right. Christine Ladybird McPherson fights against, but is exactly like, her wildly loving, deeply opinionated, and strong-willed mom. I don't know that I agree with that synopsis, but we'll get back to that. A nurse working tirelessly to keep her family afloat after Ladybird's father loses his job. Set in Sacramento, California in 2002... Amidst a rapidly shifting American economic landscape, Lady Bird is an affecting look at the relationships that shape us, the beliefs that define us, and the unmatched beauty of a place called home.
So, case in point, real quick on that synopsis, that was actually directly from A24's website. So, that's how they describe it.
Which is one of the distributors, right?
Yeah.
Or one of the... They were one of the production companies, actually. Yeah,
the production studios.
Which is... That's a charming look at synopsizing this film. I don't know that I agree with half of what's in there, but it sounds nice.
Directed by Sacramento's own Greta Gerwig, Lady Bird stars Saoirse Ronan, Laurie Metcalf, Tracy Letts, Lucas Hedges, and Odeya Rush. This film is Greta Gerwig's solo feature directorial debut, so this is her first director's, you know,
like feature film.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of...
As a director, obviously. She's been a performer for many years.
Yeah, she's been in several different movies. I think one of the more recent ones was Jackie with Natalie Portman. She was in that film.
Oh, the TV... HBO? No, that was in the theaters. Yeah. No, see, here's the thing. I keep sidebarring. They have so many Kennedy specials that run. When I'm in the gym and I'm like watching the promos and stuff, they have so many documentaries and whatever.
Hashtag Chad works out.
Not really. I walk on an elliptical machine. It's not all that exciting. Anyway, I get things confused. Also, I didn't see the Natalie Portman Jackie movie, so...
I think I only saw part of it. That's one reason why I remember it.
I saw part of it. It was called The Trailer.
There you go. Like we said, this is her directorial debut. According to director Greta Gerwig, the first draft of her script was 350 pages long, which would equate to a movie nearly 6 hours long.
Yeah, they say basically with screenwriting, the script is, it averages out to a page a minute.
Really?
So 350 pages, without actually performing the thing, you would estimate that it would be 350 minutes long.
Just being read from beginning to end.
Being
like
shown.
Out, just,
yeah.
Wow.
Being embodied. Because, you know, obviously sometimes like some scenes go faster, some go slower because of the pacing and the tone and whatever, but... Yeah, that's the kind of the rule of thumb.
True. And last but not least, this was the highest grossing film of the production company A24 as of December 2017.
Interesting.
So like we said, we wanted to jump into this film and really give it a fair shake, not only because it is based here in Sacramento, but like we said, it is one of those films that's getting a lot of attention. I mean,
tons of attention.
Everybody is constantly on the topic as to whether or not this film will win the Academy Award for Best Motion Picture. And so, I mean, what kind of filmlosophers would we be if we hadn't seen all of them? Which I think we've seen a good majority
of them. Like, don't speak too soon because there are a few that we haven't seen.
But like to Spencer's great point, we haven't actually hit the Academy Awards yet, so we still got time to finish.
So we're doing an episode a day this week, gentlemen.
Oh my gosh.
There you go.
Such a backlog.
Don't say that. There's only like, what, 5 nominees or 7 nominees?
No, Best Picture has up to 11. I think this year there are 10.
Really?
Yeah.
We're going to be here a while.
Remember they changed it a couple years ago, like 4 years ago or whatever, because they used to divide it into like... Mm-hmm. Best comedy or musical versus best
That's
picture,
right.
And why do comedies and musicals not qualify as a best picture and all that. So now it's, they have up to 11 slots, and I believe this year they filled 10 of them.
Huh. Wow.
I could be wrong about that. I'm wrong about a lot of things.
It's okay.
Anyway, there are a few that we haven't seen, and you're not going to hear about them from us until after the Academy Awards, but this one you're going to hear about first.
Exactly. So... right from the top, like we said, this movie has special ties to the city of Sacramento as the majority of it is filmed here, and we are based here in Sacramento. We are from, the majority of us here at this table were born here in Sacramento. Not all of us grew up here, but we are currently
the
here
the majority,
now.
As in two out of three.
Yeah.
Eh, two out of three ain't bad.
That's 66%. That's majority.
That's a majority. Hey, look, Chad's in the minority here.
Wow. That's true. I was not born in Sacramento. That's you got that right.
I'm just helping.
In a live episode, folks. In a live episode. Powerful.
Oh my gosh.
Is there a phone a friend option? Can we like replace?
Hey, I said that on my first episode as host.
Well, I'm sensing a pattern.
So,
also, this is what happens when we don't talk to each other before the show about what we're going to talk about for the movie, because we don't know what each other's going to say, so we're basically stalling for time.
No, that, I didn't mean it that way. I really didn't.
Okay.
But, cut it out. No. So, obviously, like I said, we saw the film, and we... like
allegedly.
Said,
I mean, nobody's heard anything to convince them yet that we have. We did.
We did see it, and we have not really talked about it all that much between the three of us here. Which, like I said, is going to be interesting because I'm interested in hearing your guys' opinion in terms of just the film as a love piece to Sacramento altogether, just in that aspect alone. But there are several aspects that we're going to talk about. And, of course, one of the first ones being our expectations for the film before we saw it. So... Spence, why don't you crack open this can and let's
okay,
get
the reason
rolling.
Why I'm laughing is because originally I thought this movie was about Lady Bird Johnson, the
Thank
first lady
you.
Of the United
Thank
States.
Thank you. Don't be ashamed of saying that because I thought the same thing.
So wow. Yeah, initially I had no interest of seeing this movie because I thought it was something else. But then once I learned it was about Sacramento, I was like, well, who would want to make a movie about Sacramento?
But that's then once I learned speaking. That it was about my home city, I thought, why?
I don't even want to look out the window in the morning. What are they doing?
Well, it's like one of those things where, like, I was born and raised here. I've lived here my whole life. So maybe living here my whole life has lost a little bit of appreciation for my town, which this movie kind of brought back a lot, even though there's tons of things I still don't like about it. But yeah, no, that's
fair
that
enough.
Was my expectation
totally fair.
Going
nope,
into this.
Like Chad said, that's totally,
totally fair. And I have to agree with you. Now, obviously, once there was a trailer, I first heard about Lady Bird when it was doing the film festival circuit. Mm-hmm. And because it was called Lady Bird and I thought it was about Lady Bird Johnson, I didn't even read the synopsis of the film from like film festival reviews. I was like, eh, pass. And that might not be fair. Maybe Lady Bird Johnson was a lovely human being who did
true.
A lot of good things.
That's
and if
true.
They did make a
I mean,
film about
get the
her,
nickname Lady Bird, so.
I should watch it anyway. I don't know. I judged the book by its cover, except I didn't even look at the cover. So then the trailer came out and it got, you know, its wide mm-hmm. distribution. And I thought, yeah, I still don't want to see this movie. It just, it doesn't, I don't feel like I'm the target audience for a film like this. It's really intensely like a mother-daughter relationship, right? And the daughter in particular, Lady Bird, name that she gives herself, she, without explanation, by the way, we don't know why she calls herself Lady Bird.
Yeah, that was weird.
I was expecting some kind of a payoff, and I never got it, and that really irked me. Anyway, that's a sidebar. We'll get to that later. But, yeah, mother-daughter relationship, some tension. The daughter is a high school student, and, you know, there's, you know, high school-related stuff. And I'm just, that doesn't, like, check any of the boxes that say Chad as, like, a target audience member. Aside from appreciation for movies. So yeah. I was willing to see it. I didn't go kicking and screaming like I have to some of the other films that we've reviewed over the years. But
it's true.
But it wasn't at the top of my list to see this movie.
Kicking and screaming. I kind of have to agree with both of you. It was one of those films where it completely flew, no pun intended, Lady Bird, it flew under the radar for me because of the fact that I wasn't, you know, really looking in that direction for noteworthy films. Obviously, in the enthralls of everything that happened last year, everybody was on the Get Out, either on the Get Out hype or the, you know, DC not making it hype, or the Marvel really hitting it out of the park with Thor hype.
Right.
And those are the three major hit points for me to recognize from last year. So out of all that, I think those are the three most prevalent parts cinematically of my year last year that I can honestly remember putting focus on. So I don't remember really putting much interest or focus on this film particularly. And even after, of course, same thing, even after I heard, you know, oh, it's about Sacramento, I'm like, well, I live here. I mean, nobody wants to go see
anybody who's listening who's not from Sacramento or maybe who has never visited. Don't let the cynical, jaded perspective of Sacramentans dissuade you from visiting Sacramento, because there's a lot of stuff going on right now that is actually, you know, making Sacramento more prominent. Yeah. It's definitely an emerging city and metropolis on the American stage, and we're very proud to be headquartered here. There's a lot to love about Sacramento,
very true,
which happens to be the capital of the state of California.
Very true.
Eat that, Los Angeles.
Well, most people
and
forget
San Francisco
that and think it's either San Francisco or Los Angeles. I know. But I think it's more like, you know, if someone like made a film about New York, are New York people going to be like, oh,
have you not seen King Kong?
Have you not seen every movie?
Just every single movie about fashion is in New York.
Okay, that may be an exaggeration, but
I know, but like, no one in New York, I feel like, would get excited about a movie because it's set in New York.
Yeah, not as the sole reason. Yeah,
yeah. So I feel like that's kind of true for most people in their own hometowns.
And I would agree with you on this, on that note. I think that if you want to see this movie because it's set in Sacramento, that's not really enough.
It's not a reason.
It's not really enough to go see it. It is a love note to Sacramento in some respects, but it's not a love note to Sacramento. It's set in Sacramento.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a difference.
And I think the biggest thing for this film is exactly what, you know, what Spence was saying, is that, you know, we are here in Sacramento. And first off, even before I say that, to what Chad was saying, with all respect, of course, to Greta Gerwig, if for any reason, miraculously, she finds this podcast and she listens to it and she's like, what they're talking about? No, we appreciate and we give respect to the people who can make those types of films and are doing the big things that they're doing and getting attention for.
And who bring prominent projects back to their hometown.
Yeah,
that's exciting.
Yeah,
exactly. But I mean, in all honesty, one of the biggest things that I see when it comes to this film is, I mean, I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh yeah, I know that thrift store. Oh yeah, I know that road into.
You got excited with the thrift store when you saw like the teaser scene from before the movie had its wide release.
Because I'm like, I think I know that thrift store.
Recognize the inside of the thrift store, not the. They didn't show the outside necessarily.
I know Thrifty Town.
You were like, I know that place.
But
and they didn't dress it up at all.
Nope, it looked exactly the same way.
And that's exactly how it should have looked.
Yeah, like there's a blue house in this movie that they show like from, and like I was like, I know where that is, but I can't remember. So like part of the movie, I was like trying to find it on Google Maps because like, I've seen it before and I found it. But like, yeah, there's like,
I knew you would.
Things that are like mildly distracting from me because like I lived here my whole life and I'm like, oh man, we've had the same buses for 10 years. We should really upgrade Sacramento. Invest in your bus system.
10 years or?
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's like 15 years.
Yeah, it's been too long.
At least.
Like the same
at
buses.
Least. Say at least.
The 80s or something.
Yeah.
But all in all, like aside from the aspect of already being here and not really being interested in seeing a film about here and not really paying much attention to that particular film in what was already going on as major key points of last year, like we said, you know, with Get Out and all the hype that it's created, the DC bombs that they were knocking and dropping, and then, of course, with Marvel's knocking Thor out of the park and actually making him a really great character and a great franchise. For me, we've talked about this on the show previous. We're not really big into the indie scene yet. And I use the word yet because that is one of the goals that I talked about earlier this year. I would like to get more into that, but that was a film that really spent a good amount of time in the indie circuit before.
Yeah,
it became,
quite a bit.
Before it became an actual,
like basically the entire year.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
It debuted early in the year, probably at Sundance.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt.
Yeah.
So, You know, it's unfortunately, it's one of those things of circumstance where we just, it just wasn't on our radar. And thankfully, after the fact, after we realized that we all had friends who were telling us, oh, Lady Bird's the greatest. Oh, Lady Bird is now my favorite movie. Or we have a friend that's a couple.
Yeah, we have a few people who gave it major props.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, big time. And they told us about it. And because they know we have a podcast, they're like, oh, you haven't seen it yet? You haven't seen it yet? I think at least 20 or 30 times we've heard those words. Oh, wait, you have a podcast and you haven't seen it yet? So...
typical.
Yeah. but obviously, we actually went and we saw the film. And, you know, it's interesting because the film, as much as we've stated that it is meant to look like a love piece to Sacramento, it really just utilizes Sacramento as the backdrop, like you stated. And it doesn't really... I'm going to be honest. There were parts of it that I was like, you know, there's more to Sacramento just in... except that area. I'm like, I was kind of getting a little frustrated with that particular aspect because of the fact that where it's the film takes place, literally just down the road from there, maybe 10 blocks, is the South Side, which isn't very nice. But I didn't see any of that in the film, and I was just interested in
well,
just
but that's because that wasn't... like, the point of the movie is not to showcase Sacramento.
Yes.
You know, and that's something that... I mean, I think that's true of most movies. Like, mm-hmm. most movies are not a love letter to the place where they are set. Mm-hmm. Some movies are, and they're meant to be so, and you know that going in. This one, it just, Sacramento happens to be the setting of the film.
Yeah. So, obviously, as the film begins, you're introduced to several of the characters. Actually, you're introduced directly to the dynamic of the mother-daughter.
Like, right away.
Right away. They're literally in a car having a conversation. And we're not going to do a play-by-play, but because this film kind of sets the tone for everything in the entire movie. They're literally bantering back and forth about the possibility of colleges and schools and things of that sort. And I found it funny yet kind of sad that I was able to understand completely some of the little quips and quirks that she was, like, the mother was throwing at her daughter. So the daughter wants to go to, like, an East Coast school. She wants to be, like, an actor or something like that in the creative arts, liberal arts. And the mother's like, their school's fine here. They're you know, just around the corner, blah, blah, blah. And ultimately, the mother lets out a jab. It's like, well, you know what? Then you can go to Sac City College, go to jail, get out of jail, and then go back to Sac City and finish up and get yourself better. And I'm like, but I went to Sac City. Don't roll your eyes, Chad. But it was just...
it's no comment.
It's an interesting dynamic, the way they allow the characters to speak and the way they're addressing other people and the way the dynamic of just the dialogue itself, I think, is really interesting for each of these characters. The way each one of these is introduced, it's not in like a, ta-da, and here's Spence, the individual who does this, 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 and that. And here's Chad, but ta-da. And it's more of like a, you know, oh, this is my brother. Quit being so stupid and put the magazines down. And it's like, and it's like there's a sense of realness and rawness in the way they're portraying the characters and the way they're allowing them to be presented. But I thought that was a really interesting aspect and a choice in terms of, you know, choosing how to present your characters in a film.
You know, I said a couple times after watching the film that to me, this felt more like a stage play than a movie. And I like that about it because stage plays often are more intimate, mm-hmm. More deliberate with word choices, and not in the sense of being like, you know, poetic and Shakespearean or anything, but just the way that you decide to be very realistic with the way that you have your characters speak. I think of all the awards that it's up for at the Oscars this weekend, the screenplay award, the best original mm-hmm. screenplay, that's the one that I would give it first because I thought the screenplay, the script was actually phenomenal in terms of how authentic it feels.
Yeah.
It feels very genuine, even for all of its mess, because people are not, you know, amazing human beings all the time.
No.
And the people that we're closest to are the ones that oftentimes see the worst sides of us. And that's definitely true in both directions, between the mother and the daughter. in this film. Several other characters, you mentioned the brother, you know, and some friends and whatever, but really the mother and the daughter, that's the heart of this movie. Mm-hmm. And you know it from the get-go, and you have this scene. At first they're listening to an audiobook recording from The Grapes of Wrath. And they're like crying together because of how it ends and whatnot, and then they start conversing and immediately move into like passive aggressive argument and then direct argument. And you know, it's just one of those like, oh yeah, that feels like a family dynamic right there. You're kind of intruding on a private family moment in the car. But it tells you everything that you need to know basically for the rest of the movie. Just like you said, Eddie, everything that you need as a place setter is in that first scene. The rest of it is just, you know, extra shading, and nuance and detail, which again is a lot of the way that stage plays tend to work. And to me, I don't know if it's how quiet the film could be sometimes or how controlled your frame was in terms of like, yes, they're in Sacramento, but you're not following three or four different storylines. You're following one storyline.
Yeah.
Like you're basically with Lady Bird the entire time.
Oh yeah.
Very, very few deviations from being specifically with her. She's almost always on screen. So to me, that it just, a lot of it felt like more a theater production than a film. Not in a bad way. I think it was quite charming.
Yeah. Spence, what did you think?
I thought it was good. Chad's on pretty much all the stuff I was going to say.
Sorry.
Like, no, it's cool.
You can totally just tell me, stop talking.
No, like my favorite bit of this movie is like the opening scene, because it really does set up everything for this movie, because like, yeah, audiobook, and then they fight, and then she just like gets tired of it and throws herself out of the car.
Okay, that was phenomenal. Yeah.
It was amazing. So.
Yeah, the Lady Bird gets so fed up. Mm-hmm. She just opens the door and goes out.
Yeah, and there's been times in life where like I felt like doing that, but I didn't want a broken arm. So I can understand that level of frustration.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting the way they established early on the very unique range of emotions that these two people have towards each other. Obviously, it's a mother-daughter relationship, but to really establish within what, 3 minutes of time,
sure,
the fullest amount of the emotional range that these two share with each other, from having a bonding moment over listening to The Grapes of Wrath on audiobook to, you know, and sharing this,
which in and of itself tells us everything we need to know right there.
Exactly.
They were bonding over The Grapes of Wrath.
Yes.
I mean, sure, give Steinbeck some credit because he's not from Sacramento, but he's also from California.
He's from California.
So, but yeah, Grapes of Wrath is a bit of a brutal experience.
Oh, yeah. And then, you, like Chad said, you see the progression from that bonding moment that transitions over into passive-aggressive arguing to arguing over something so minimal and so small at the time, but then you also see the extent of how the teenager will go and just throw herself out of a car to not hear her mom anymore. And I think that's a really great image to kind of keep in mind when you see the rest of the film, because it really does set up everything. But like we said, there's a lot of other great characters in the film as well. You have the father, who is a very unique character as well in terms of the overall plot, played by Tracy Letts, who, although he's kind of the backdrop character for the majority of the film, he is a point of frustration for the family. Not in so much like he's causing issues and tensions, but the state of his work status is causing the tensions and the issues in the house that, you know, obviously are out of his control.
Yeah, there's a lot of subtext in this film about the role of money.
Yeah.
In the life of a family, and how money obviously is a tool that we can use productively in certain ways, but money can also be an extreme limiting factor. A lot of what the mother in particular is going through in this movie has to do with her anxiety about the cost of different things.
Yeah.
And certainly by the time her husband loses his job, and that's not a huge spoiler moment for us to reveal on the episode, but by the time he loses his job, you know, they've already been stressed about money, and now that's going to cause additional stress.
Yeah.
And Yeah, so it's interesting how reflective the movie is on the role of money, almost sometimes as, I don't want to say a member of the family, but like a key influence.
Oh, yeah.
In all of their conversations.
Yeah, because I can honestly say, like, from personal experience, you know, obviously it wasn't filmed or anything, but I remember from personal experience where situations like that arose, and it's interesting how similar the dynamic is, where the mother is the one who wants to state the facts and be the one that, you know, is like, okay, this is what's going on, this is what we need to do, you need to, you know, these are the stipulations now that we have to follow according to the house, and where this is the father is usually the one's like, okay, it's going to be fine, we're going to figure it out, let's take it. I mean, that's kind of the dynamic of how our house was. Several times where obviously money was, you know, was an issue growing up, so instances like this came about quite a bit. But it's funny how I see the similarity between the way this family worked and how it tried to resolve the issues and try to make things work, in contrast to how, or in similarity actually, how my family followed suit and did the same thing. So It's funny how just how the mother is portrayed as this individual who is like, okay, you know, blah, 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 we got to do it like this, we got to do it like that, we have to fold your clothes. Yeah. I actually went to private school. I went to a private school only because of the fact that both my parents were working at the private school, so I could, you know, go there. But like, I remember those times where it was like, no, don't scuff your pants, because then if you tear those, you don't have another pair. We're going to have to, or like, you know, your dress shirt, your school shirt has to be ironed and pressed before you go to bed. Make sure you put all that stuff away because we can't afford another one. I mean, I remember those conversations. And like, at the time, I was like, man, you're horrible. Like this, I just want to be a kid. I just want to have fun. But like, now that I'm on the other end of just like seeing how the responsibility works and how it's supposed to, you know, how you're supposed to take care of things and so forth, I was kind of siding with the mom the majority of the film, which is probably...
It is interesting how much you can see when you're no longer young.
Yeah.
I mean, not that none of us are exceptionally old, but when you're no longer young and you've had some experience in the world, you know, if I had seen this film as a teenager, I would have felt differently about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as we move forward, like we said, we get a lot of interesting characters. We get a lot of interesting personalities. We get a lot of interesting dialogue.
Here's my thing.
Yeah.
Interesting characters. This is the other thing that I didn't realize I wanted to say until I wanted to say it just now.
Go for it.
There were a number of side characters in the school that I loved. Hmm. How honest they were. Like the head nun, I don't know if they call him Mother Superior in a Catholic school like that, but like essentially like the head nun in charge of the school, when she was having private one-on-ones with Lady Bird, she was surprisingly normal, I guess it's not really a good word for me to use, but it's the feeling that I had. I'm like, oh, you're conversing with her
like a human being
conversing with a human being, not like, I'm a nun, these are the rules, and you follow them. Like, she was actually very warm in their private conference moments. The guidance counselor that you only saw once, who basically was like, yeah, you don't have a chance getting into Yale.
She's so great.
She was basically my favorite person in that movie, and she had like a minute and a half of screen time.
Yeah.
And then the father, the priest father, who was in several scenes, he leads the drama club for a little while. And then you kind of sort of learn something going on in his personal life, and then they totally drop it. And it's gone from the story after that point, which was a major faux pas for me. I was like, hold on, wait a minute. You went through the trouble of introducing this scenario to us. You've got to finish it. And they didn't. So I'm like, I mean, it's your first time, Greta, but shame on you. That should have been a promise you didn't make or a promise that you kept.
Yeah, I was just sitting here thinking about it. Like while you were talking about the mother-daughter relationship, I was like, wait a minute, we didn't learn what happened with that priest.
Yes, at all. Like, that's the last scene with him in it, isn't it?
Yeah.
The private conference with him and the mother who's a nurse.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we switched to the madness of the coach taking over the drama club.
Oh, my gosh.
Which was just insanity.
It was funny.
It was hilarious. But I was like, how did this play happen is what I want to know.
And I think...
But my point is, I liked those random side characters a lot. And I could have used more of them.
True. Like her name's Sister Sarah Joan in the credits.
Okay.
She's actually, in my mind, she's actually very opposite of what you normally see as portrayed for nuns. I mean, we've been watching Family Matters on Hulu for a good amount of time. We've been watching through the seasons, and several times nuns appear, but as they appear,
and several times nuns appear just out of nowhere. They walk into the kitchen.
Yeah, they just come in
like Steve Urkel. They just waltz in.
My son, may we sit with you? No, and they appear in the series, and they're always portrayed as like holier than thou, like, you know, we are the epitome of holiness and things of that sort. And it's funny how in this one, you're right, the conversation, the dynamic between her and Lady Bird, it's very casual. It's like, yeah, you know, that was funny. Lady Bird does this joke and
yeah, she pranks her.
She pranks her and she's like, oh, it was hilarious, but I've been, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's great. It's
refreshing. She kind of ups the ante.
Yeah.
Like she leans into the joke instead of chastising her. And I thought that was really a good choice.
Yeah, that was cool.
But I have to agree that that point of that particular character's name's Father Levietch, the character that almost felt like to me, and not to the fullest extent of how bad that one was, but it seemed very similar in tone as to how the room's scene was with the mother who has cancer. And it's like, wait, so what happens? Wait, what happened to him? And
that is quite the comparison to make. Although I see your point. I do see your point. You introduce randomly this other element of the story,
and then
you don't follow through.
Yeah.
Yes, except this one was much less hilarious.
Right.
That we know of.
And much more mysterious. You don't actually know what his medical issue, like for sure, is.
Yeah. He could just have gout or something.
Versus in the room where the mom's just like, and then I had cancer and da-da-da. Like, I mean, it's just like nonchalant. It's totally the wrong read of the scene.
Yeah. But you're right. A lot of the side characters, like even the character of Kyle, he was really interesting in terms of his dynamic and how despicable his character turned as the film continues on.
It's just so like lackadaisical. Like, are you awake ever?
I don't believe in money. I'm gonna work on the barter system.
I'm just bartering with people.
But yeah, the film has a ton of great side characters, and unfortunately, not many of them are known, you know, widely, other than what they've done in this film. So,
right.
Or else we would name each and every one of them. But as the characters are introduced, and as you're introduced to the story, and as the film is continuing on, you're obviously aware of the story that it's unfolding, and you have the story of this mother and daughter who are, you know, obviously coming through life together, and she's growing up through high school and she wants to go to a school in the East Coast, blah, blah, blah. But it's the storytelling style that is really unique in this particular film, because it doesn't really take like a... It didn't seem like sequential all the time. Like everything is happening, but I don't think at any point in time did the film seem like it was established at what times these things were happening, or if they were even in particular order. You know what I'm saying?
The only indication you had was when she has a cast versus when she gets the cast removed from after throwing herself out of the car.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's...
So you know it's like, oh, within 6 to 8 weeks of the first scene, mm-hmm. all the rest of the movie, much of the rest of the movie happens in like a 6 to 8 week time frame, because she's in the cast most of the film.
Yes. But I have to say this, and this might be a bad thing. I don't really care. This film and the story, the style of storytelling, it seemed almost like a really, really, really well-polished Napoleon Dynamite type of film.
I completely understand what you're saying.
Okay. I'm glad I'm not just... I was waiting for the backlash.
I feel weird, but I totally understand what you're saying.
It did. Like, every single character and the way they responded to each other, the way the honesty was, the way the flow of the story went, how there was points of seriousness, and then one off scene that didn't really make sense. And it just... I don't know.
Well, there's definitely something to be said for sticking to your guns. I mean, in terms of not only from a creator standpoint, but even at the character level. I mean, Lady Bird, one of the things that I think people really appreciate about the character is that she really doesn't back down, ever. Like, there are a couple of scenarios that happen in the movie that cause her to take a step back and realize that she didn't go into certain scenarios with eyes wide open and like pushing to really understand something before she started acting on her urges. But I mean, who doesn't have moments like that, you know, where you just essentially you jump into something without evaluating what that something is, you know, whatever it is.
Oh yeah.
And she does that a couple of times and she's kind of like, you know, she needs to take a step back. Her ego's a bit bruised. She's embarrassed, you know, and she realizes that she still has some growing up to do. But for the most part, she really owns the fact that she is her own person. I mean, she gave herself the name Lady Bird.
Yeah.
Again, why, Greta? Why? I'd like to know. We never do. But she does. She wants to be her own person in a way that very few... like, I think a lot of teenagers say that they want to be their own person, but they don't know how to stay the course necessarily the way that this character does. And I think that's what a lot of people appreciate about her. I found it a little annoying at times, but I'm also not a teenage girl and I never was. So even like as a grown person trying to relate, there's some stuff that doesn't work the same.
Yeah.
In terms of like just the mental pathway, I guess.
Yeah.
But I can respect that. They've created a character here who is decently self-aware and kind of knows what she wants and goes for it and doesn't let too much dissuade her. Even the peer pressure angle, she wants to lean into the you know, going for the other kind of friend group for a while. Like that's what she wants. So, you know, it kind of all falls within the same realm of like how she's characterized is very consistent throughout.
Yeah.
What do you think, Spence?
Yeah. No, like Chad said, like there was like lots of points in this movie where like she was wrong about stuff and then she learned like certain lessons. Like especially with the hanging with the cool kids, because like there was just parts of this movie where I'm like, why are you with these people? And I feel like at a certain point, like near the end, she's like, why am I here? I want to do this other thing. And she went and did the other thing, which I was like, yay, you're living your life and not letting people bully you into whatever they're trying to do.
Yeah.
Being, oh, we're too cool for prom. Yeah. Just go to prom. You're already in the dress.
You're really, yeah, and it's that's a nice moment in the movie too.
Yeah, and even now that you're talking about it, even like the characters themselves, they seem like really well polished characters that would have been in that particular film, the Napoleon film. They seem very similar in the way they're portrayed, the snottiness and the uppityness, and like it's really interesting how while I was watching the film, I was just getting those vibes. In the little bit of you know instances where it really came to surface, but I mean that maybe goes back to like at the time. Who knows when Greta Gerwig's biggest influence occurred in her life? And seeing as this film takes place in 2002, I don't know when she graduated from the school out here. Greta Gerwig is an alumni of a private school actually out here in Sacramento called St. Francis.
Mm-hmm.
We know this because it's just down the street. No, it's not down the street, but it's here in town. But I believe she graduated in like 2002, 2003. Either way, around that time, obviously, Napoleon Dynamite came out in like 2004. Maybe that was one of those things that...
Yeah, I mean, and I see what you're saying. It's not like Napoleon Dynamite.
No.
In terms, like... It's not a comedy. No. There are comedic moments in this movie, but it's really a coming of age drama. To your point, it's full of quirkiness.
Yes.
Like even to the point of, you know, Sister What's Her Face, the head nun, doesn't behave like a stereotypical nun. Like she gets pranked and you think, "Oh, like there's pranking a normal person and then there's pranking a nun. She will invoke the wrath of God upon you." But she doesn't. She behaves differently. She's got her own brand of momentary quirkiness. And that happens repeatedly. Even the cool kids do not behave like stereotypical cool kids.
Yeah.
They kind of are like indie cool kids. I mean, they're all quirky. So, you know, and severely disengaged from what's going on in their lives. You know, and maybe that's because they had things handed to them. You know, it's not really ever explained, but all of them are quirky. I think the least quirky character in the film is the mother.
True.
Even though she's a very strong presence and they have quite a few headbutting moments, she's the least quirky. She's the most by the book character that you've got in this film. And I think that was a brilliant choice. Structurally speaking, again, I would give the script an award before any of the other categories that it's up for. Mm. Cause I think you really have to choose that early and you've got to stick with it.
Yeah.
From a creative standpoint. Otherwise, you know, you'd go the Napoleon Dynamite route and everybody's quirky. There's exactly. No straight man, or straight character, in the entire piece. Everybody's the wacky one in yep. some way, including LaFonda, who is my favorite, but, just because of the name, because it's so ridiculous. Anyway, it's about all I remember of Napoleon Dynamite. It's been too long. The Lady Bird, though, the movie Lady Bird, it's far less extreme than Napoleon Dynamite. Thank but God. I see what you say. Yeah. It follows the same cadence.
Yeah.
I didn't see Napoleon Dynamite, so well, actually, no, that's not true.
You're killing me, man.
I watched part of it, but I fell asleep, so I can't compare.
Did anything stand out to you, Spence, in terms of the way the film was, like, the way the story unveiled for people who are watching it? Was there anything unique about the film that you caught on? Anything that maybe, in terms of the story or the way the characters, you know, acted or something that really stuck out to you?
Well, I've never been, like, a teenage girl, as the rest of us have never been.
I was going to say, I don't think anybody in this room has ever been a teenage girl unless there's some explaining.
We're in agreement.
Okay.
So, I'm not, I can't really, like, comment on, like how an actual mother-daughter relationship is. But, like, I found, like, this whole movie, like, super engaging. And I was kind of surprised by that because the mother character is super abrasive. Like, I kind of get where she's coming from, but, like, a lot of times I'm like, why would you say that? That's such a weird thing to do. They're trying out clothes. And Lady Bird's like, I love this dress. And the mother's like, it's a bit too pink. And I'm like, what, compliment your daughter. She looks great in this dress. But, like, things like that were the story between the mother and the daughter. It was interesting because it's not something I see in a lot of movies like around now, so it was pretty captivating for me.
And that's an interesting scene as well. I mean, the whole if we were to actually take the time, that whole mother-daughter dynamic is really interesting in terms of how it's portrayed, because it's not same thing that Spencer says. I don't think any of us here have ever been a teenage daughter, so having that relationship in that aspect is not really something we can relate to. But in the interest of, like, observing from outside in, it's really interesting seeing how this relationship, honestly, and it doesn't say it, but it's been sustained for years, like having this type of relationship and the way they talk to each other and the way they converse and the way they argue, and then how it's like on a dime it changes, and it's like, oh my gosh, this is so beautiful, oh, it's so nice, blah blah blah. Like, It's weird, but at the same time, there's beauty in how fluid that dynamic works. Mm-hmm. You know, it's almost seamless.
Well, and I think that back to a point we made a lot earlier in the conversation, the authenticity. I think that these toxic moments, while the movie kind of weighs a little heavier on the toxic moments than the charming moments between the mother and daughter. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, some people do actually have that kind of relationship where the toxic moments do outweigh the good stuff. The bad stuff outweighs the good, but you still want to, you know, love each other and try to get along and all that kind of thing. But, you know, I think in terms of the overall, the full arc of the story, where you end up, because they do have this very intense, everything reaches a boiling point. And there's a really intense scene near the kitchen sink where the daughter is trying to get the mother to forgive her for, you know, a mistake that she's made. And the mother can't offer forgiveness to her, can't even talk to her.
Yeah.
And then the way that that all plays out by the end of the film and comes full circle in two separate ways. You have like, you have the mother progressing in her character arc, and you have the daughter progressing in her character arc. And I love how it shows two very normal, fallible people. Like, start to finish, nobody is the hero versus the villain.
Yeah.
In this movie, obviously it's told from the girl's standpoint, so more often than not you're kind of rooting for her, and you're frustrated with the mother. However, I think that by the end of the film, it seems a little more equitable, the treatment of the two characters. Because I was frustrated, actually, for most of the movie. I was like, wait a minute. Like, we've seen the mom have redeemable qualities. Why can't, like, why do you have to only write scenes where she's a butthead, you know, or whatever? Like, I was frustrated with that because, you know, I like giving people the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, of course.
It's kind of my MO. But by the end, I feel like you do have a little more even distribution of, like, the daughter still making mistakes where she is and starting to learn from them and respect things in a new way, see things in a new light, you know. And the mother, kind of her abrasiveness, great vocab word, Spence, you know, her hard exterior cracks. And you start to have hope that things will repair, you know, but that's an ending that you're going to write because the movie doesn't satisfy you in that way. It kind of leaves things somewhat open-ended.
Which I kind of like, though, because I kind of like them just like, you know, not doing that like sitcom thing where it's like everything's wrapped up in an hour and 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, so that was actually really pleasant because like they just set it up to where like, you know, Lady Bird like reaches out. She's like leaves a voicemail for both her parents, well, mostly her mom, but both her parents. And she's like, hey, mom, dad, it's Christine. And she's like using her name, like showing she's matured a lot. So I thought that was cool.
Aside from that particular frustration, Chad, was there anything else in the film that kind of irked you or bugged you in terms of the film holistically?
Holistically, not really. You know, you go in understanding it's an indie film, and I think it's hard to say, well, there's a genre called independent film. I think that there are a lot of different unique films that all fall under that banner. So I don't say that as like, well, that means it has these qualities because it's an independent film. However, I think independent films do play in a bit of a different lane in terms of they're not going for broad mainstream appeal. And so they do tend to lean into a certain rhythm, a certain way, a certain manner of presentation. Yeah. Not unlike the way that an action movie, regardless of if it's, you know, mixed martial arts or, you know, street racing cars or spaceships, like there's a cadence to an action movie. You've got to keep the adrenaline going and keep the acceleration factor in there. Indie films really tend to not have a lot of that. They're more contemplative and in many ways more realistic, I think, by nature. Not all of them, but films like this. And so I think that there was a lot in this film that really stayed true to that angle, you know, to that energy and that flow. It still wasn't my favorite movie.
Yeah.
I definitely, unlike some of our friends who were like, oh my gosh, this was the best movie of 2017. I disagree. I wouldn't even put it probably in my top 10 personally, but I also don't have a point of connection. Yeah. Like, again, mother-daughter relationship. I've witnessed many of them. I've never been a part of any of them.
Thank God.
I am neither a daughter nor ever will be.
A mother.
And I am not a mother nor ever will be. So, you know, I'm an observer, maybe a side participant at best. I can respect what they've done here. But, you know, it was like, oh, it was pretty good for a first go as director and writer and possibly semi-autobiographical. I mean, you write what you know is what, you know, they say you write what you know. So it's not a bad go. It wouldn't be my first choice for a second viewing.
See, I actually really like this movie. And I think it's because I have no point of connection. And it's like just watching someone else's life. And it's so interesting to me because I can't quite relate to it, which is kind of why I was so drawn into it. I was very surprised how much I liked it.
Interesting. That's an interesting perspective. From my perspective, there was minimal points of connection in terms of, like I said, with the finance issue. And then obviously we are here in Sacramento, and I'm originally, before I moved up to the area that we're in, I was previous to this in the South area. So I of many of the areas that they were showing, I know most of those particular areas. So that was another point of connection. But even with those two, this film seemed to be more geared for the younger, even like maybe Gen Z audience. For me, it seemed like it was feeling more like that, for like a word of caution type of film. Like, hey, you know, make sure you're grateful for the things that you have and where you're at, kind of thing.
Sure.
And I could see that as working really well for that particular type of audience. But for me, it was a good film. I could possibly put it in maybe my top seven out of 2017. Maybe, yeah, it would have to be top seven. Just because so much came out last year that I was really impressed with. But, you know, I would be willing to see this again on Netflix. That's my possible second viewing. So with that said, why don't we go around the table and start with Spence? And does it pass or fail for you? And how many monocles?
Yeah, this movie passes. You know, it has a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Okay, so we got the good part down. Okay,
check.
Yeah. So no, like, I just found it very enjoyable just to have something that was different from what I normally view. So I will give it a 3.8. It's pretty good.
A 3.8?
Yeah.
Nice. Nice, Spence.
Hey, right, no, we're doing point systems. You brought that in.
Chad. It is your fault.
It is my fault. I'll take yours. That.
I would say it passes for sure. I would be a fool to not pass it. I just happen to have fewer things that engaged me about it. Certainly, there's a lot to appreciate. Laurie Metcalf, I've enjoyed her ever since Roseanne. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I just think that she's a phenomenal performer.
She is, actually.
And I like her versatility. So, small plug. Good casting. And, yeah, I would give it a pass, and I would say 3. I'd put it right in the middle of my out of 5. It's totally solid movie, totally good first go. I just wouldn't watch it a second time too soon.
Yeah.
Like, maybe in 10 years I'd watch it again just to see, like, oh, yeah, what was that movie about? Because I'll have forgotten by then. Yeah.
Similar, obviously, it's getting a lot of attention with the awards and whatnot, so I'd be a fool not to pass it. Obviously, it's gotten the attention because of its ability to be a complete film, if you will. So it obviously passes for me. I'm going to have to agree, though, with Chad in terms of how many monocles, and give it a 3 out of 5, just because, like I said, it's a really well-rounded film. It's a film that I'm pretty sure will speak to a lot of people who connect with it on a deeper level than I did. But it's one of those films that I will gladly wait until Netflix to possibly see it again. Like I said, that's not to say it's a bad movie. That's just
And for goodness sake, Greta, can you tell us what happened to Father What's-His-Face?
Yeah, and give him a better name. I'd love to know what... Naviach or something.
Like, I just really wanted to know.
Greta, if you're listening.
I mean, the man please. Did a cry test that he won with all the drama kids.
Oh, that's probably why he won. Right. Because he's dying.
Because something's going something's on.
Something's wrong that we don't know.
But, like, he just disappears out of the story.
Maybe he has gallstones for all we know.
No, it's more serious than that. But, like, it bothers me still.
It does. Yep.
So, Greta, you need to explain this.
You know Greta Gerwig out there. Let her know that we're talking about her on the Film Philosophers. And that about wraps up another awesome episode. Again, if you would love to follow us, check out our website at filmphilosophers.com, or check us on our socials at facebook.com/filmphilosophers or twitter.com/filmphilosophy101. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Before we let you go, I want to let you know of a couple upcoming weekend releases. We got Death Wish, the remake with Bruce Willis, and we have Red Sparrow. I don't know why I rolled my R. But Red Sparrow.
I know, like, instead of Russian, they've become Spanish.
With Jennifer Lawrence. Both of those films debut this Friday, so if you get a chance, check them out and let us know what you think. This was a great episode. And of course, like we said, the Oscars are coming up this upcoming weekend. We're excited to watch them. We're going to be watching them and hopefully posting our thoughts live on Facebook. Just little posts here and there on Facebook, Twitter, maybe even Instagram. Who knows? We got to get on our social game.
Hey, let's go hog wild.
So if you'd love to follow us on that, check us on all those platforms as well. And yeah, like we said, fun stuff. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.